Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Maddie Myers coming to you from the E3 show floor. And I am joined by Alex Mendez, otherwise known as Golden Boy, esports commentator, caster, host extraordinaire,
yeah.
Has been seen on Overwatch League commentating Counter-Strike, Call of Duty, all kinds of shit.
Yep.
And he's here with me at E3. What's up?
I'm very excited to be here. We were just talking about how incredible this whole setup is.
Podcasting? How cool it is.
I just want to do this. Like, this is like,
want to get out of esports into the lucrative field of podcasting.
Hey, why not? I think obviously, you know, you're doing it for Kotaku.
Yep.
Great website. Read it every day.
You used to work for Kotaku. Do you want to talk about
Kotaku,
that a little
bit?
Yeah,
I used to work for Kotaku. This was like a while ago.
Yeah, like 2013 is the last time.
Yeah.
I looked up your old articles, checked them out, gave them a look.
And I learned a lot. So the editor-in-chief at the time, I believe, was Tina Meany.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe deputy. Deputy.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, Steven.
Yeah.
And my interview process was actually really great. So I had applied for this position, hoping that my chops in esports would be enough. And mind you, I've done nothing of note
around the word chops,
yeah,
by the way, air quotes.
I haven't done anything notable
at that point.
Yeah. Besides like Call of Duty commentary and stuff,
which is not nothing.
It isn't
because you started doing that in like 2011, right?
Yeah, around like 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
So yes,
and that was like the pre-Twitch esports days. Like, people don't understand how different.
So we were averaging like 25,000 to 30,000 viewers a tournament, and it was huge.
That was impressive.
Yeah,
and
like
amazing.
We were like everything, you know.
Yeah,
it was super cool. But I was hoping that my chops in esports at that time would be enough, and it was. I got an interview, and mind you, I was such a huge fan of Steven Totillo and like the entirety of esports journalism. Like, coming to E3 was my dream as a kid.
Right,
I used to get
my
issues of EGM magazine with Dan Shu, Sue, you know, writing the stuff. Che Chow, who I ended up working with in Halo. And just reading about all of the cool stuff that happened at E3. So having the opportunity to be able to work with like a very well-known website like Kotaku was a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
Then, as I started working there, learning about the lifestyle and of journalists in video games, I have so much respect for it because it's so hard.
Yeah.
And especially like wording.
I feel like I look at what you do now, and to me, it also looks very hard.
So I think what I do is like stupid easy, and anyone can do it.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So I have like.
You've transitioned away from journalism into the
into
world
like
of esports casting and hosting shit, which is easy and fun.
So
and rules.
I love it. I love it. It's great. But there are times where I'm like, you know, when I did like Overwatch Finals at Barclays Center.
Yeah. I was there.
Yeah,
you
okay.
were working.
Yes.
I was also working in a way.
So let me tell you. And before I'll wrap up my Kotaku side, but
sure.
Let me tell you, like at the Overwatch League finals, we talked about what the game plan would be as far as like the opening of the show.
Yeah.
And I didn't really have much of an idea because I thought I was going to go in and host the desk for a segment. Then they just changed it on me. And then they said, actually, we want you to host the stage. And I thought, all right, sure. Surely this isn't going to be a big deal.
There's only hundreds and hundreds of people out there.
We get to Barclays Center, and you know, we're seeing like the crowd fill in.
Yeah.
But I did like a hit at the top of the bleachers because they wanted me to like reflect on a story of when I was there at Barclays Center because I live like five stops away from Barclays.
Yeah.
So they wanted me to like reflect on a story about me doing a. Like, or going to Barclays. So I talked about this time I went to Monday Night Raw, and I ended up seeing that, like, The Rock made a surprise appearance, which is, like, really weird because, ironically, like, many, like, a few months later, I ended up working with The Rock on Titan Games. So it's, like, really, really random.
Is he cool?
He's an amazing human being.
Great.
100%.
Good. Love to hear it. Anyway.
Anywho. So I'm looking around, right? And I'm seeing the nosebleeds, and they're not filled out. So I thought, okay, we're probably going to fill out the bottom row.
Yeah.
Maybe not the nosebleeds. So wrap up the segment. It was great. I kind of get, like, rushed down to the back of the house to get ready to open the show. And then I start to hear, like, more noise outside, and I'm like, oh, you know, the acoustics in Barclays is, like, really good, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then my my friend Kevin, who's, like, the stage manager, I asked him, I was like, oh, hey, should I, like, poke my head out? And, you know, he's been doing show business for a little while now, and he just said, you know, man, you're good. Just chill back here. You'll be all right.
Don't exit this area.
Don't exit this area. And I was like, all right, cool, man. I'll just stick here. So then, you know, they do the show, and then Annie Up plays, and it, I mean, like, from MOP, and, you know, the music's, like, bumping, and crowds losing their freaking minds.
Yeah, it was sold out, man.
Crazy. I walked out when they slid that door open, and I walked out. I had, like, a little pee come out, you know, just a little pee.
Just a little.
Just a small smidgen of urine just right at that moment.
But then you held it. You came together.
And then I actually just went on autopilot.
Yeah.
And then I just, like, said, all right, here we go. I just got to do this. I just got to get it done.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that was the Overwatch League Finals, which was hands down one of the craziest things I've ever done in my life.
It's cool to see you in action. I've seen you live at a couple events. I saw you at, like, a Counter-Strike one and this, where you, like, go through the crowd and you just, like, shoot the shit with people or, like, play games with them. Like, do you get to come up with your own segments when you do stuff like that?
Mostly
or
they just give me crap.
Like, you have to do this. And
so most of the time they'll give me, when I say crap, I mean crap. You, like, I have to turn a turd into solid gold.
Right. Right. They're like, you need to give away this shitty t-shirt, and you have to, like, find an amusing way to be like, okay, gamers, now give a shit about this thing I have in my hand.
When we did the major for Counter-Strike, they didn't have things to give away because it's Valve, and Valve doesn't do stuff like that. Like, Overwatch, they have t-shirts and stuff, right?
Yeah.
But Valve doesn't do that. So then we got to the idea, like, this guy that I worked with, and he was a riot. I forget his name, but he was absolute riot. And he was just like, I have $100 in my pocket. I'm going to break these into ones. And we're going to go into the crowd, and we're going to give people $1.
$1 bills.
And that's what we did.
I remember this. You were doing, like, mini games with the audience, being like, such thing will happen.
Yeah.
And one of you will win $1. And people were
losing their minds. I was walking down the halls of the major. And mind you, this was the, like, first major I had ever done.
Yeah.
This was, like,
hundreds and hundreds of people that you're walking around dealing
TD
with.
TD Bank Arena in Boston, I believe. Crazy event for E-League. And also, I did, that was my second Counter-Strike event that I had ever done in my career. But it got to the point where people would stop me in the hallway. You'd be like, yo, Golden Boy. I want to win a dollar.
And you're like, listen, I don't have any more dollars. I need to leave.
I have no dollars on me.
Well, but so, like, zooming out, like, what's it been like for you seeing just the ways that esports has waxed and waned in the past decade? Like,
it's been crazy.
It's crazy to me just as a viewer of it and covering it, but, like, you're working in that scene. So, like, we're definitely, I feel like, in a more of a bubble time again where, like, there's these huge tournament venues. Like, a lot of people are watching it, but, like, how do you feel about that and, like, how it's going?
When I used to compete in Call of Duty, at a decent level, but I wasn't a pro, but I was all right. You know, I would say, like, top 24 is probably the highest I'd give myself in as far as a team.
Not bad.
But that was
again the pre-Twitch era.
That was back in the day, right?
So, and, like, people would go see you live, and there wouldn't, like, how would people get footage of your event?
We would be playing in ballrooms, or not even ballrooms, restaurants.
Yeah.
Like, we'd play in a restaurant in the middle of Pittsburgh or in a skating rink in New Jersey, you know, and that was the event. And at the time, people were streaming. They were putting their stuff on JTV, Twitch, YouTube. That was kind of a little battle going on there. I think Respawn made a move for YouTube or Machinima Respawn, whatever was the name of that company. Like, they did a few tournaments on YouTube and stuff, and, you know, it was much smaller. And I think, like, where it is now, it's honestly crazy. I get it because it's entertaining. I think that there's a lot of stuff that obviously needs to continue to improve with esports, because I feel like that's kind of the thing that I did well. And I don't, I never, just so you are aware, Maddie, I never toot my own horn, ever. I'm just not that kind of a guy.
You can toot it. You're on a podcast. We're talking about you.
I'm so awesome, everyone.
You have saved esports, right?
I've saved
individually fixed it, finally?
I'm the esports savior.
What do you think the problems are with esports since you
oblique referred to them? Well, I think the issue is we try our best to be like sports, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's great. But one of the things that I did really early on in my career was I watched professional wrestling.
Yeah.
I'm a huge pro wrestling fan. I'm actually going to be calling my second professional wrestling event in like 2 weeks with AEW. And
cool.
I'm very, very pumped for that. But the reason why I'm saying that is, you know, we have like a lot of potential. We have a lot of talent. We have a lot of uniqueness. But we're getting a lot of people coming in from sports that want this very like vanilla, you know, like we're here talking about the game and then we're going to go to a break and then
right.
You know, like we're talking to kids and we're talking to an audience of kids that just want to be entertained, you know? Yeah, sure. There's a time and place to like break down the action, break down the gameplay, but let's have some fun. And I think that is something that I've been doing as much as possible. I think it's one of the reasons why like myself, Sideshow, Brandon, Reinforce really resonated with the audience for the World Cup, for the Overwatch World Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it really resonated with them because it was fun. It was entertaining. We did ridiculous segments. We had Brandon a wig. We had Sideshow
like
drink maple syrup.
Yeah,
you know, like we did really good stuff, and I really liked that. And I think, can you do that all the time? No, you can't do that all the time. But you can at the very least, like, sprinkle that entertainment with a little bit of that informative, analytical commentary. And that's where I ideally want to get to.
Yeah. Do you think that the traditional sports models, like the people who are coming in that don't understand esports, do you feel like that's a problem? Or do you feel like they're kind of picking up on it? Because there's a lot of traditional sports people who are involved in Overwatch League.
Yeah, yeah. I think that their head is in the right place. And I think they understand what it is that we are trying to as gamers and what we want, right? You know, but I think yes, there is also that feeling that perhaps, you know, they're going too far on the safe route, just trying to like lay it out there as like a pure
sport.
Yeah,
like there's like franchise, like the idea of a franchise league. Like
we're
now
totally
in this age of franchise leagues, and you're like
hardcore against
it.
I was like hardcore against it. I was like, this is stupid.
At one point, when did you flip on it?
I flipped on it after I did the Overwatch World Cup Sydney stop.
Okay.
That's when I flipped, because that was the first time that I had really seen regionality play such a big role. We were in this beautiful venue in Sydney, and it was Team Sweden versus Team Australia. This match was being broadcasted on TV, and I remember seeing just the pure insanity of the crowd. I was walking through the crowd, and people would straight up tell me, oh, I don't even like Overwatch. I'm just here because I'm rooting for my boys from Australia. And that's it.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, well, if this is how it's going to be at a country level, how would it be at a city level? And then when I really started to get the flip on it and really begin to believe in it was when I started working and talking a lot with the NYXL guys.
Yeah.
And then I started to see that fandom, Five Deadly Venoms, that fan group that spun up from it, and then just the overall like desire from these fans to just like love this team. And the reality is, like, this is a Korean team. This was a team plucked right from Apex in Korea. Nothing, you know, no real like personalities among them. But once they put on that jersey and became New York Excelsior, then all of us were like, they're New York.
Yeah.
They're New York, and we got to go with them. We got to cheer.
Yeah.
You know, and then it was an easy
sell. It's like a brain trick that you play on yourself where you're like, now they are my team.
Because I never rooted for like a Korean team before, not because I didn't like them, but just, you know, they're Korean teams in Overwatch always won. They were just so good, right?
Yeah.
They would always beat the European and the Western teams. But the second they put on that jersey and became the New York Excelsior, it was a wrap. I was like, I'm a New York Excelsior fan,
and I became
invested in it.
I agree with you that franchising part, at least with Overwatch League, has been going way better than I thought it was going to go. But I feel like the counterpoint to that is stuff like the rise of Fortnite and like influencers as opposed to esports, and the idea of people identifying very strongly with like a specific streamer or person that they like as opposed to a team. And I think that is going to play out in an interesting way.
I would agree.
In the next few years.
Yeah. I would agree. I think that Fortnite's an interesting beast because, you know, we have a lot of players that have come up You know, guys like Poach or Vivid or 72 Hours or Aiden. And these are pros that have created a brand.
Yeah.
But they're nowhere near as big as like Tfue, who's also a pro, but he's still like very much now a brand. Ninja, a brand.
Yeah.
Nick Merckx, a brand. And people do want to see them compete. I think Fortnite's structure and allowing anyone to be able to compete allows for that kind of freedom of expression with the fans. But when we get to the Fortnite World Cup in New York City,
yeah,
that's going to be interesting because, you know, you're looking at, if you look at the people who have qualified, very few big names. Tfue qualified in solos. It's probably the only big name, right? Like, you have some other names that are, like, known amongst the Fortnite community, but for the most part, it is, like, just pros, kids.
Yeah.
14, 15
years old. Do you think
that's
because it's not an invitational format and it is that qualification format, so it's resulted in just some randoms?
So, obviously, like, the cream will rise to the top. The best players will rise to the top.
In that scenario, yeah, because it's not an invitational. It's
and
more...
one of these kids are going to walk away with, like, $4 million.
Which is crazy.
Which is insane. But... you know, will that kid walk away with $4 million and all the fame? Maybe. But I still think that Ninja and those guys are going to be pulling
They're
in
gonna
all
They're
going
to be pulling in the consistent income. Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting to me. I've been curious to see if, like, more Overwatch League, more of those kids are going to sort of spiral off and be like, I'd rather go the influencer route because, like, as they individually get famous, they might decide that that's a more consistent way to make a living in esports.
Yeah, it is. It's also, like, weird in comparison to traditional sports. Again,
yes.
Because we
like
cannot,
that's even an option in esports
cannot,
is that you could be like, I'm just going to stream.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We cannot measure ourselves to traditional sports because in traditional sports, a guy does not just go stream and become a personality. Like, yeah sure, it's starting to happen more and more now, but it is not... like, that was not an option.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, DeFran played one season and then said,
you know what?
I'd rather stream.
I can make some more money if I leave.
And then that's what he did. And now he's, like, more successful than ever.
Yeah.
XQC, another one. Yeah, sure, he had a
he bit managed of a, to turn getting kicked out on its head and be like, listen, guys, I can be famous this way.
And he's good.
Yeah.
He's good.
He's
right?
good. But also, so, people like to watch him. They think he's entertaining.
Exactly. So I think that that is the... that is the crux of it, right? That is, you know, that's the reality of this world.
Yeah,
and there
so
there are options for these players.
Weird. But, and I think it's resulted in people sort of debating about what esports can be. Like, I've definitely seen some people kind of try to claim, I mean, I say claim like it's a bad thing, but like claim that like sort of influencers streaming stuff is still esports just because they want to be like, esports is
look
successful.
At Twitch Rivals.
And like, here's how it works. And or shit like that.
Yeah, like Twitch Rivals, you know, like that whole program spun out because Broadcaster Royale was pros and streamers and the pros are dominating the streamers.
Yeah.
So now it's like, oh, the streamers don't want to play with pros? All right, cool. We'll make something else. And then they made Twitch Rivals, which is just all streamers. And that's all well and good. I think that esports is a term. And this is where I also believe a lot of people kind of get hung up on.
Yeah.
Esports is a term kind of for a little while meant elite competition.
Right.
And it's not the... they're not wrong. But esports has also kind of just become that blanket term for competitive gaming.
I know.
And... I'm not, like, as a guy who works in esports and is, you know, has been doing it for a very long time, I'm not opposed to it. I'm okay with it. I think if more people are just enjoying competing against one another, to me, that's a win. If companies like Nintendo can finally start getting behind it, I don't care what the hell they call it.
Yeah.
They could, you know, they call it whatever they want, but if... you know, like, I'm watching over there. They have, like, people playing Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games, right?
That
great
is
game.
Gonna, that is the next great esport, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, yeah,
clearly.
Hell yeah.
Are you excited to commentate matches of Mario and Sonic?
Good example. Splatoon 2.
Yeah.
Right? People were telling me, oh, that's not an esport. I said, why is it not?
Yeah.
Why, what defines it not being an esport? Or even, like, when Dr. Disrespect, like, said mobile gamers aren't real gamers. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, I know the doc. He's a cool dude, but I'm sorry. That's garbage. That's hot garbage.
Yeah.
Like, I watched Vainglory players sacrifice everything to win the Vainglory World Championship. We see Clash Royale players have to figure out all these unique ways on how to, like, become the best player possible. Brawl Stars, another great game that has tons of potential, and I see players that do incredible things in that game. Do not sit there for a moment and tell me that this game cannot be an esport. It has all the capability in the world of doing so.
Yeah.
It just depends on the community and the players and what support is being thrown behind it. That's it. And maybe that's like old guard guys are not going to like that.
I mean, I think it's old guard guys, but I think it's also kind of tied to the idea that esports for a while was like supposedly a quote unquote meritocracy because it was reliant upon these like open pools. Like at least fighting games still always do open pools.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
like shooters don't always do that anymore. Sometimes there's different qualification processes for those games, but it's still
yeah.
like the idea behind it is the best players are going to be the ones that you're watching. And
yes.
that's changed in a lot of ways. And I mean, it's kind of ironic for Dr. Disrespect not to recognize it as a person who's definitely in like streamer / influencer space, and
yeah.
it's like people aren't necessarily watching you because you're the most elite gamer. They're watching you because they're entertained by you,
yeah.
and like that is as important in the esports space, at least in my view, as the meritocracy stuff, which
yeah.
is why it's so surprising mm-hmm. to me that those kinds of attitudes still prevail in that space where
yeah.
like the idea that you have to be like ridiculously good. I mean, that's not a bad thing. Like being ridiculously fucking good is great, but also being entertaining is important. I'm just lecturing you.
No,
now.
No. Being entertaining is important. And that's where, you know, to be frank, that's where I've kind of come in, right?
Where, because you suck at games and you're very funny.
Yes. Yes. Very funny is a questionable, but suck at games, yes.
You did not. You were in a college.
But
you said you were good.
I was all right. But my thing is that I have to be that personality, right? Which is why, once again, gaming and esports is different from traditional sports. Because,
yeah.
sure, Joe Buck, Chris Collinsworth, sports announcers,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah.
They probably are, you know, like, yeah, sure, like, people know them, they're fans of them, they enjoy their work. But they themselves are not one of the reasons why people tune in. But legitimately speaking, like, esports commentators sometimes are reasons why people watch stuff. Like, I remember seeing Tasis and Artosis cast StarCraft II. People would lose their collective minds if anyone else did not cast. If it was not Tasis and Artosis, do not bother.
Yeah.
You know? Day 9, right?
Yeah.
Another great caster, Total Biscuit, another amazing caster. Like, these are people that they were stars, and they wanted to watch them. And I think that is why we have what we have in esports, where the casters are also
personalities.
Part of, yeah, personalities and part of that celebrity, if you will, quote unquote, of the of this world.
I mean, I consider you a celebrity. I know you don't see yourself that way, but I'm like, you've been on TV and like
yeah.
you've done shit, man.
Yeah, yeah, but so is like, you know, Snooki, you know, and I don't consider her anything special.
Well,
so.
She's a celebrity. I hate to break it to you, man.
I know,
people
but
know who
it's
she
like,
is too.
But like, you know, reality TV stars, I should say. But yeah.
You think esports is above or below reality TV?
Oh man.
Just kidding.
I couldn't
everything
say.
Everything is low art or high art. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think it also exists in its own world, right?
It does.
Video games really is its own world.
But
it's
you know, every
beast.
Now and then I'll go to a bar now, like a sports bar, and they'll be playing like E-League matches or whatever,
yeah.
something on
or
TV.
Overwatch League or
it's,
something.
Or Overwatch League or something like that. And so like, is that strange for you to kind of have entered into this different stage of your career
for
where
sure.
you're like, now people know me and they're maybe not gamers. They're maybe just like people. Has that been happening yet?
Yeah, well, it has been. You know, as a matter of fact, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I'm going to be calling my second ever professional wrestling event with
right, yeah.
AEW at CEO, which is going to be coming up in 2 weeks. And we had Kenny Omega just announced it and stuff. And then I went on Reddit. I'm a huge Reddit wrestling fan. I'm on there all the time reading all the news and stuff.
You got to stay informed.
And someone then like put, oh, on the comments, like, by the way, Kenny Omega also announced that Golden Boy is going to be joining the announce team with Jim Ross and Excalibur and blah, blah, blah. And then people started commenting like, oh, I saw that guy on Titan Games, or, oh, yeah, I know this. I saw him host the EA Play thing, and he was pretty good. I'm excited. Like, people who just have no idea who I am. And even then, I'm starting to see a little bit more. Like, even now, I'll be like walking around and a guy comes up to me and he's like, I've seen you somewhere before. I said, oh, yeah, you know, I do esports. And he's like, ah, Golden Boy. And then, like, kind of clicks. And to me, that's ridiculous. Like, I don't understand why that's a thing. But, you know, you just kind of got to own it and accept it. So it is ridiculous. It is insane to, like, you know how much that meant to me to be on ESPN? And it also meant a lot to me to, like, have that name, Alex Mendez, like, be on ESPN, right? Like, you know, it, to some it may not matter, but to be a Hispanic kid born and raised in the Bronx, didn't have the greatest up, you know, not the greatest up. My mother was fantastic, but born and raised in a very rough neighborhood in New York City, and being told your whole life, like, you're not going to be able to do much because you're from this impoverished part of the city. And then to, like, walk onto the stage at Barclays Center in front of, like, 20,000 screaming Overwatch fans. And, you know, like, the first thing they saw was this, like, you know, portly Hispanic dude from the Bronx. To me, it's just like, holy crap, right? Like, that's crazy. And that's, like, my life. And it always shocks me. But I think that what helps me in keeping grounded in all this is that it still is shocking to this day. Like even for you, like, you came to find me for an interview for a website
also,
I read every day.
That I used to work for.
I used to work for, but also that
now, in my position, I'm used to seeing you, like, as a tiny speck on a stage amidst hundreds of people with whom I am watching you. So it is a different perspective for me.
I guess so. And it's just crazy. So I never really thought it would get to this point, but I'm very grateful for it. And it's been a very incredibly wild ride.
Yeah. So, like, before I let you go, do you want to talk a little bit about Level Up and the show that you've done?
Yeah, sure. That was the thing we were supposed to talk about, right?
Yeah, we could talk about it. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, no. Again, it kind of goes back to the absurdity of, like, life. Like, you know,
these... In that now you are hosting this show.
Yeah. Like,
well,
these guys...
Well, explain what it is.
So Level Up is... the way I say it to people is Pimp My Ride, but for video game setups.
Uh-huh.
Without the fish tanks in the cars, you know, the way the exhibit used to do.
You're not
going to
put fish tanks in people's PCs, or...
No,
instead
we just RGB everything and we give them giant TVs, which I think is probably better.
Yeah. But you give them, like, a gaming chair and stuff too?
Yeah. So the whole point of the show is, you know, we find people who have, you know, setups that need a lot of work. And then we would go to their home. We would gut their whole room and then give them new stuff, new furniture. It would go beyond just being a video game setup. Like, we'd hook up their entire room.
Yeah, to make it like a sound place, system, etc.
Yeah, to make it like a place where they want to be, where they want to hang out, where they want to chill. Having an awesome video game space is very important. I think people don't realize how important that is. When you're able to, like, walk in and you see, like, your setup and it's nice and it's clean and it's put together, it's inspiring. It makes me want to do more. It makes you maybe want to make your own content, make your own podcast, do things like that. So there's some really, really cool stuff that we have cooking there.
How did you decide who to pick?
So the Subnation guys, they went through it, but I was very clear with them that, you know, one of the things I wanted to look for more than anything was people that really needed it.
Yeah.
That was my,
like,
that was my number one thing.
Or just, like, emotionally?
Both, you know, financially, emotionally. You know, they made some choices on their end, but I was very clear with them.
Because I'm sure they wanted, like, a diverse lineup of people and stuff.
Yeah. And I told them, like, listen, you know, just pick people who need it. That's what's most important to me.
Yeah.
I used to work as a social worker for many years. And I worked with people who had developmental disabilities. I worked with people who were diagnosed with HIV/AIDS. You know, so helping people is, like, very important to me. I love my work. Like, I would still. I actually tweeted about it the other day. Said, you know, if all this goes away tomorrow, I'm okay. Like, I did my job. I did what I could do, and I'll go back to social work and I'll go back to helping people, and that's fine with me. And I feel like I'm not beholden to any of this, right? I'm just doing it.
It's just fun.
It's just fun, and I'm just doing it.
But it's also, like, I mean, gaming is a very exclusive, expensive hobby. So, like, by kind of gifting someone, like, an incredible gaming room, it's, like, sort of like a miniature lottery where you're
exactly.
like, we're going to just give you the best possible equipment you could ask for.
Yeah.
And now you can do whatever you want. Like,
exactly.
you could make content, you could do whatever.
Yeah, and
with
so that message of helping and giving it was I wanted that to pass through, and I wanted them to realize, like, hey, the stuff you're getting here, it's, like, this
top
is good
of
stuff.
The line,
this is top of the line stuff.
Electronics and shit.
You can do some cool stuff with it. So I think it's great. And I'm very excited to see the reception that people have to it. You know, nervous because it's, like, also
It's
weird
just
for me.
It's just a fun show, it
yeah.
seems like.
You know, I mean, we're not expecting to go out there and win any awards and stuff. Like, I think we just wanted to do something that'd be cool for a select few gamers. Hopefully, we can keep on doing it. You know, my ultimate goal is to take something like that and take it to the inner city.
Right,
you know, doing
right.
something for those kids. That,
like making over a school and being yeah. like, we're going to give you guys some incredible gaming
equipment.
Exactly.
It's one of the reasons why I work with Gamers Outreach Foundation so much, because what they do is they take these, like, go-karts that they build and they, like, put them in these hospital rooms so that the kids can play.
Wow.
That means a lot to me, right? Like,
yeah.
I just want people to be able to play video games and enjoy it, and because video games are so freaking awesome.
They really are. They're not as accessible as they could be,
yeah.
and this is, like, a way to make them more accessible
exactly.
to people.
Exactly. So, step by step, you know, change your world one smile at a time. Just hope you can do good, and that's really what it's all about. So,
yeah,
really
right
glad
on.
I got to do it.
Is there anything else you want to plug?
No,
before
I mean,
I let you
I really
get back
don't,
to E3.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, don't really have much. You know, it's been a wild ride. I'll be doing Fortnite Pro-Am at the end of the week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, then when does this go live, by the way?
Next couple days.
Next couple days?
Yeah.
So probably by then, but it will be announced, but I'll share it with you anyway.
Are you going to be, like, hosting it? Or
Fortnite Pro-Am, I'll be commentating, but
cool.
also the week after that, this is breaking news. I will be hosting the RLCS. I'll be making my return to Rocket League.
Wow.
In New Jersey, so I'm very excited for that.
Just, like, a bonus question. It is crazy to me how many different games you commentate.
Yeah.
Like, how do you even keep up with all the different intricacies of so many competitive games?
You know what? I genuinely just love video games.
So you're just like, yeah. I don't even, it's not even a job to me. I just love
video games. You'll notice, like, I never take a job for something, for a game that I don't know or don't really have much passion for.
Yeah.
And I just love video games.
It's just, like, wild to me that I've seen you commentate or cast in so many different kinds of games, and
yeah.
now you're like, yeah, I'm going to do Fortnite and then Rocket League later. And
yeah,
I'm like, what?
And then wrestling 2 weeks after
yeah,
that.
It's yeah, amazing.
Like, people ask me, oh, how many games do you do? And I was like, let me see here.
Them,
I did
pretty much all of them.
Halo, Gears of War, Overwatch, Counter-Strike, Rocket League, Battlefield.
But it's not like you're
but,
fucking it up either. Like, there's bad commentary, but, like, you're out there, you've got, like, detailed observations about
things.
Yeah.
There's some games, obviously, where I'm more well-versed than others, like Overwatch. Watch Halo,
yeah.
right? But it's also about understanding your roles, you know? One of the things that I wanted to, like, work on very much so when I was getting into this was being diverse in, like, what I'm capable of doing.
Right.
So if I do need to host a segment on a stage like what I did earlier, or if, you know, I need to do an interview or commentate or analyze, I want to make sure that, like, I understand and, like, I'm aware of, like, where I'm going, you know? Like,
yeah.
I'm never going to commentate Counter-Strike, right? But I'll do interviews and hosting
right,
for
because you don't feel qualified to commentate it.
Yeah.
But you're interested in, like,
exactly.
helping out with it.
Exactly. But
yeah.
I'll commentate Halo, and I'll do, you know, everything for Halo because I know everything that there is to know with Halo.
Wow, everything.
So,
cool.
Well, you know, for the most
what
part.
What does Master Chief look like?
Well, that part.
You can't reveal it.
Who knows? You know, maybe I do know, maybe I don't.
Fair enough. Yeah, well, you know,
I just know from
know.
Descriptions on books, you know. Yeah, honestly, like, to just kind of, like, wrap it up.
Yeah.
I love video games. And that's it.
Cool.
And
same.
And it's whether it's esports or general gaming, like, I'm literally going to go right now and go play Harvest Moon Mad Dash.
Please
because
do.
That game is the best games I've played at this entire
You're
event.
A Harvest Moon fan?
I wouldn't have expected it. I am
Don't
not
know why
really,
not.
And that's how I play that game. Now I'm going to play Harvest Moon all day. So
that sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, have a great time.
Thank
it was
you.
Great talking to you.
Same.
Happy E3.
Thank you.
Kotaku Split Screen is an official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Kirk Hamilton, Jason Schreier, and me, Maddie Myers. Kirk edits and mixes the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. We're a part of the Fusion Podcast Network, where Mandana Mafidi is executive producer of audio. You can find us on popular podcast services like Panoply, NPR One, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. And we hope you'll leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at kotaku.com/splitscreen. Email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.